family that meets on Sunday mornings. Three families in America. Is that working? Yeah. Right. We're going to read from the book of Job. I thought, seeing as I preached on the internet from Job, would do the second one. Used to be in the summers, I would take subjects that anyone gave me through the letterbox, a text, a passage, whatever, and somebody said the book of Job, 38 verses. So I did three sermons on it. Job chapter 2, please, and the first 8 verses. Again, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them to present himself before the Lord. And the Lord said unto Satan, From whence comest thou? And Satan answered the Lord and said, From going to and fro in the earth, and from walking up and down in it. And the Lord said unto Satan, Hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil? And still he holdeth fast to his integrity, though thou movest me against him to destroy him without cause. And Satan answered the Lord and said, Skin for skin, yea, all that a man hath will he give for his life. But put forth thine hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will curse thee to thy face. And the Lord said unto Satan, Behold, he is in thine hand, but save his life. So Satan went forth from the presence of the Lord and smote Job with sore boils from the sole of his foot unto the crown of his head. And he took a potsherd to scrape himself with and sat down among the ashes. And the Lord will bless the reading of his inspired word to us. Job was a spiritual man. We looked at last time on Zoom. A spiritual man who was rich. We learned also that from the first chapter there is an unseen world, a world of God, a world of angels, spirits, and Satan. And what happens in the unseen world affects what happens in the material world. The two worlds are not disconnected, but they are entwined together. Now in this spirit world, Satan, we are told twice in the book of Job, gets permission from God to unleash a salvo of misery and trouble upon Job. Job reacted, as you would expect, with sadness at the loss of his children and all his wealth. And yet through it all, he worshipped God. Job freely admitted that it is God's prerogative to take back from us that which he has given. And Job's attitude was that he would love God even if God didn't bless him. The teaching was basically that Job's faith overcame the troubles because Job's faith was placed in God himself. Job's faith was not dependent upon the blessings that God had showered upon him. So henceforth the blessings could be removed and his faith remained the same because his faith was in God, not in the prosperity and the blessings. Job did well. He had lost much, but he kept his faith. But it's not over yet. In chapter 2, we go back in the first 6 verses to the unseen world again. And Satan went back to God and is found among the presence of the angels. And we see here in chapter 2 a conversation where God again points to his servant Job and says that Job is righteous and there's none like him in the whole earth. It says that, but note what it says in the last little third of verse number 3. He fears God, eschews evil, and still he holdeth fast to his integrity, although you move me against him to destroy him without cause, it says. God says, without cause. Note that little phrase. There is no reason why this was happening to Job. Satan in verses 4 and 5 says, yes, flesh for flesh, all that a man has he'll give for his flesh or his life. Allow me to touch his body and he'll curse you to your face. If Job's health, Satan believes, if Job's health is taken away, then he'll curse God to his face. See, Satan, we learn from this, Satan does not believe that Job's faith is in God. Satan believes that everyone has their price. Everyone has the button that they will push. There is a way, there is a means by which anyone, including Job, will curse God. So another test of Job's faith then follows to prove the faith of this holy man of God. God says, he's in your hand, but spare his life. This far, Satan, but no further. Limited by God. Satan is limited by God. So Satan goes from the presence of God and Job's misery increases. A second salvo of affliction, verses 7 and 8. So Satan went forth from the presence of the Lord and smote Job with sore boils from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. And Job took him a potsherd to scrape himself with and sat down among the ashes. What's the diagnosis of Job's sickness? Some of the commentators, looking through the whole of the book, try and diagnose what this illness was. It's a combination of three things, they conclude, those with medical knowledge: boils, leprosy, and elephantitis. The symptoms are these: aching bones, chapter 30, verse 17, peeling skin, chapter 30, verse 28 and 30, wart-like eruptions, chapter 7, verse 5, weight loss, chapter 19, verse 20, fever or a high temperature, chapter 30, verse 30, depression, chapter 7, verse 16 and 30, verse 15, weeping, sleeplessness, chapter 7, verse 4, nightmares, chapter 7, verse 4, failing vision, chapter 16 and verse 16, rotting teeth, chapter 19 and verse 20. And he looked awful, according to chapter 2 and verse 12. So Satan takes Job's health. And Job is left sitting on the ashes, scraping himself with a broken piece of pottery. The richest man, the wisest man in the East, is reduced to this. Note Satan's tactics against godly people, brethren. Slander, chapter 2, verses 4 and 5. Personal attacks. Persistent. Satan is persistent and unmerciful. And he uses friends and family against the person. There is no depth to which Satan will not stoop. And Satan's thinking is that health and life are valued more than God to human beings. Humans will put their health and their life before God. They will put their possessions before God. If you take the possessions away, that was his first curses. They'll put their family values before God. There's always something, Satan believes, that a godly person will put before their faith in God. That's Satan's mindset. But sadly, it's very popular in Northern Ireland, isn't it? Health before God, life before God, possessions before God, family before God. I wonder where anyone that thinks that way got that mindset, because it is without doubt Satan's mindset from the book of Job. Again, we see the unseen world affects the material world. Secondly, Job's Job's disappointments or discouragements, we see that in chapter 2 and verse 9. I didn't read it earlier on purpose. Chapter 2 and verse 9. Then said his wife unto him, Dost thou still retain thine integrity? Curse God and die. Now, because Job's wife said this, some of the commentators, Augustine says she is the devil's advocate. John Calvin says she was the tool of Satan. And Thomas Aquinas says Satan spurred Job's wife in the first salvo so that he could use her against him in the second salvo. And that is kind of true, but it's also being a bit hard on her, isn't it? The Apostle Peter was also used by the devil, wasn't he? Anyone can be tricked. And remember also that Job's wife is the mother of all those children that are now dead. And she, as his wife, would feel that loss along with all the loss of all their wealth as well. Derek Thomas, who is an evangelical Presbyterian minister in Northern Ireland, he's in America at the moment, has written a great book on Job. And he says, those who have spent hours in an intensive care unit or nursed a child through death can identify with Mrs. Job. End of quote. The fact is that this lady is at breaking point, and sadly she does urge Job to curse God and die. She's meant to be his greatest ally, but because she is tricked by the devil or whatever it is, she becomes a weakness and a hindrance. Then we also note the discouragements of Job's friends. If you had friends like these, who needs enemies, is a saying we would say, isn't it? From chapter 4 to chapter 31, Job's friends talk with him, and he answers them. All those chapters are full of theology. Theologos, words about God. And we all know theology because we all know some words about God, because if you don't, you can't be saved. Theology. Now I'm going to sum up all those chapters, chapter 4 to 31, in two sentences, hopefully. This is the teaching of all these chapters, generally speaking, in two sentences. Chapters 4 to 31. The whole conversation between Job and his friends can be summed up like this. Quote, Job, you've brought all this upon yourself. Although you seem to be righteous, there must be some secret sin in your life, hidden, that has caused all of this. Job, you've brought all this on yourself. Although you seem righteous outwardly, there must be some secret sin hidden in your life that has caused God to punish you in this way. That's basically what all the friends said. You've sinned and God's punishing you. Their theology has much truth in it, but not in Job's case. Because there are many passages in the Bible where people sin and God punishes them. And there's chastisement repeatedly for God's people if they sin. But in Job's case, Job's friends were wrong. Because they are applying their theology to Job. But they have no proof at all of whatever sin he's meant to have committed. None. They're just seeing him suffering, and they are assuming that there's a sin that's causing it all. And that's always wrong. It's the wrong attitude for anybody to have. If someone is suffering, we can never just assume that's God punishing them for some sin they've committed. We can never assume that. If we see someone sinning, that's a different matter. We can say God will discipline. That's biblical. No doubt about that. But it's only if we can see that they've definitely sinned and are sinning that God chastens. But Job's friends are not like that. No, they were just seeing a man suffering and assuming that God was punishing him for some secret sin. They were assuming that sin was the cause of Job's suffering. And they were wrong. And God says they were wrong in the verse 3. Remember? God says to Satan in verse 3 of chapter 2, "Thou movest me against him to destroy him without cause." Which means there's no reason in Job without cause. Sin's not the cause, without cause. What was the cause of Job's affliction? Not sin, because God says he's being moved against without cause. The only cause is Satan and his vindictiveness. And it wasn't Job's fault, because he hadn't done anything wrong to deserve this judgment. It's just Satan being given liberty to test a man's faith. So if we see someone suffering, it doesn't mean they've done anything wrong automatically. Not at all. It doesn't mean they've sinned. Not at all. It can mean they've sinned. But you have to know that they've sinned before you assume that. Job, by the way, also blows away the prosperity gospel, doesn't he? The prosperity gospel. Colin Urquhart says these words: "Jesus took our sins and our diseases, our cancer and our heartaches, so that believers can be in perfect health." End of quote. And if you're not, he goes on to say in his book, it's because you haven't faith, or you haven't claimed it. What a load of baloney. Nonsense. It's not God's will that all Christians be in perfect health. Of course not. Naming and claiming it's got nothing to do with it. There's a saying a man called Oral Roberts used to say, "Something good is going to happen to you today." Oh, go and tell that to Job. It's not real at all. Tell that to the parents sit beside their dying child in the hospital. Something's good's going to happen to you today. Nonsense. It's not true. It's not always true. Sometimes bad things happen to believers. And a lack of faith, or not naming it and claiming it, has got nothing whatsoever to do with it. The Apostle Paul was sick. Timothy was sick. Trophimus was sick. Epaphroditus was sick. Maybe they didn't have enough faith, eh? Nonsense. Prosperity, nonsense. The book of Job teaches, along with many other parts of the Bible, that God's people suffer. And it's nothing to do with secret sin. And it's nothing to do with a lack of faith. The unseen world, Job's discouragement. Thirdly, Job's reaction to all this. We see it in verses 9 and 10. His wife has just said, "Curse God and die." But he said unto her, "Thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaks. What shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil?" In all this, did not Job sin with his lips? Just verse 10, actually. And all that, Job didn't sin with his lips. Job says to his wife, "Surely, love, to think that the godly only receive good from God. We always get blessed all the time." Job says, that is foolish. That's foolish thinking. To think that nothing bad ever happens to believers is foolishness. The Bible never teaches that. Come to Jesus and all your problems will go away, and you'll live underneath a cloudless sky. Where's that in the Bible? "In this world you shall have much tribulation." Jesus said, "If they hate me, they'll hate you." There'll be much tribulation for believers. And Job is saying, "Love, To think that we only receive good from God and nothing bad ever happens is foolishness. What is Job doing? I tell you what he's doing. He's accepting it. Even though he doesn't understand why, and he doesn't understand why, he's accepting it. But what about his faith? Does he curse God like Satan thought? After being tormented by his friends, after being accused of sin which he had not committed, he cries through it all, the key verse in the book of Job, chapter 13 and verse 15. He cries, though he slay me, yet will I trust him. Even if I die, I'll die trusting God. Even if it costs me my life. That's it. That's a believer. How can you defeat faith like that? You can't. It's wonderful. Job's miles above me. He's miles above all of us, I would say, more than likely, although I don't know you. But why is Job's faith so strong? How do you think his faith so strong? You know, it's because of what he believes. You know what he believes? It tells you what he believes in Job chapter 19. Let me read it to you. Here's why Job's faith so strong. Job chapter 19, verse 21 to 26. I'll read it out. All my inward friends abhorred me. Am I in the right place? Ah, yes.
It's not chapter 19.
Is it not? Chapter 19, 21 to 26. Oh, aye, 21, sir, verse 21. Chapter 19, verse 21. Have pity on me. Have pity on me, O ye my friends, for the hand of God hath touched me. Why do you persecute me as God and are not satisfied with my flesh? Oh, that my words were now written. Oh, that they were printed in a book, that they were graven with an iron pen and laid in the rock forever. For I know that my Redeemer liveth, and that he shall stand at the latter day upon the earth. And though after my skin worms destroy this body, yet in my flesh I shall see God. That's why his faith is so strong. Because of what he believes. He knew he had a Redeemer. He knew his Redeemer was alive. He knew his Redeemer was coming to stand on the earth in the end days, the last days, the first coming of Christ. And he knew that because of his Redeemer, even though he would die and worms would eat his body, he knew that in his flesh he would still see God. Isn't that amazing? This Old Testament saint, he believed in the Redeemer. He believed death is not the end. He believed in the resurrection of the body. And we'll see God all through the Redeemer, Jesus Christ. It's amazing. And that's when, it's when people, when we realize that physical life is not the end, just the beginning, and death is not the end, then physical suffering can be borne with eyes upon eternity. With that type of faith. Job's faith defeated Satan the second time. You know why I think the book of Job was written? All scripture is given by inspiration of God. It's profitable for doctrine, reproof, correction, and instruction in righteousness. It was written because God wanted people to see what real faith in him can do and can endure. Thomas Watson the Puritan says, when you crush lavender, you find it is full of fragrance. You read the book of Job and you smell the lavender, don't you? A young Christian couple discovered the body of their murdered daughter in 1981 here in Northern Ireland. She was only 9 years old. Her name was Jennifer. That event might have completely destroyed those people. They were pastored by Derek Thomas. And he writes in his commentary on Job, I'm going to read it to you, just a thread short. When a young couple whom I know discovered the murdered body of their 9-year-old daughter Jennifer, it might have destroyed them completely. Both have found peace and strength in knowing Jesus Christ. Giving testimony to their faith, Jennifer's father writes, I lost my daughter Jennifer. She was only 9 years old at the time. She went out on her bicycle one day and didn't come back. And that is the last I saw of her, until her body was found in a dam a week later. I was comforted to know that even at her age, she was saved and that she was with the Lord.
Hallelujah.
Lavender, but crushed. Crushed. Horatio Spafford, David will know who that is, you probably will too, was an American lawyer and a Presbyterian church elder. And the fire in Chicago in America had ruined him, well, not ruined him, but damaged him financially a lot. So he sent his wife and his 4 daughters across the Atlantic to England on a ship. But halfway across, the ship on which his wife and 4 daughters were sailing collided with another ship and it sank. And over 200 people died. But his wife was rescued. And his wife was taken to England on another ship, and in those days there were no telephones, it was just little telegrams. And he received a telegram from his wife, and it said 2 words, saved, alone. Saved alone. He lost 4 daughters in the shipwreck. Horatio Spafford got on the next ship, and he sailed across the Atlantic to go to England to see his wife, of course. And when they got to the place in the Atlantic where the ship had sunk, the captain told them. And it was at that very place in the Atlantic Ocean that Horatio Spafford sat down and penned these words, when peace like a river attendeth my way, or sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to know, it is well with my soul. Job, why don't you curse God and die? Why don't you give it up? You've lost everything. Yea, though he slay me, yet will I trust him. That's a Christian. Will you trust him? That way, put him first. Trust in him and not his blessings. God bless you. Thanks for your attention. I hope I haven't preached too long. Okay. Thank you, David.